Good morning. We'll call the meeting of the Ag Policy Committee to order. And a lot of activity on the schedule today, so let's get moving. Representative Daniels, would you approve the minutes of the meeting of January 25th?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I so approve the minutes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. We have a little bit of a housekeeping thing to take care of first before we get to the dairy folks. The bill passed the other day by Representative Smith. We sent that to the General Register. As it turns out, the bill didn't really go anyplace after our committee, but we have to bring it back. And I want to send it to the Ag Finance Committee so they can take a look at it, one aspect of the bill. So Representative Backer, Vice Chair Backer, would you move to reconsider the motion by which House File 22 was re-referred to the General Register?
Yeah, I move to reconsider the motion by which House File 22 was referred to the General Register.
Thank you very much. Again, just a housekeeping thing that was put on the register to go to the calendar, but we found out that it should go to Ag Finance. Any thoughts or questions on that? If not, Vice Chair, would you refer your motion to... Okay. I guess we have to take a vote. All those in favor of the move to reconsider back to the committee here, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. And now we can make the motion again.
I move that House File 22 be referred to the Committee of Ag Finance.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, members. Dairy Day, it's a day we look forward to every session. And a lot of good folks today. I see your box of treats, which we also kind of look forward to. So good morning. And identify yourselves and proceed with whatever you have on your schedule. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is David Buck. I was recently elected president of the Minnesota Milk Producers. Took over for Pat Luneman, who was a very excellent leader that we've had over the last 9 years. He's still involved on the board and is also on Minnesota Agri Growth Council. So we'll quickly outline our priorities, answer some questions, and then I'll turn it over to Maren Bozek, economist from the University of Minnesota. And later this morning, you'll hear from Kelsey and Tyler Adi, who are over here. They are part of the family of our Minnesota Milk Producers Dairy of the Year. A little bit about myself. Myself and my wife, Ann, is over here. I have two dairy farms and two sons involved with them. Ann also serves on our local school board. One son is a partner in the dairy side, and another son has a custom shopping and manure pumping business. So he was quite grateful for the action taken last year on the manure piping bill that was done. Background on Minnesota Milk, you've probably seen our legislative side. We're also involved in education and leadership development. One of our most successful programs is our mentorship program with Ridgewater College, which we are looking to expand. We also put on workshops around the state for dairy farmers, and this year we had scheduled meetings in Caledonia, Durham, Hutchinson, Rochester, and Owatonna. On the leadership side, we help grow our board members by getting them involved in things like the Minnesota Agro Leadership Program, or more commonly known as MARL. Our priorities this year, we have five that I'd like to touch on. First, before we do that, I'd like to have someone pass out the dairy product that Chairman Anderson was referring to. That would be our new Executive Director, Lucas Schostrom, who he's been with us for about a year and was named Executive Director last week, and we certainly look forward to working with him as young and enthusiastic, and I think he'll be a good connection to the younger dairy farmers in the state of Minnesota. While you're enjoying your dairy product, I'd like you to just think about that product and where what it went through to get from the farm in your hand. And that's kind of what our priorities are, to get that product from you or from us to you the best way possible. First, we want more certainty for our truck drivers. Representative Drazkowski on the Transportation Committee, and you may have already heard from him, but we are the only major dairy state with laws that allow tickets for truck drivers 14 days after they left the scale house with no exemption for milk, which is a highly perishable product. And when a milk truck driver arrives at a farm, he does not know how much milk will be at that farm. He has a general idea, but his production varies day to day. But he has to take all of it as part of the pasteurized milk order. So he has to take everything that's there when he shows up. So sometimes that can be a reason the trucks get overfilled. That kind of puts the milk truck driver in a no-win situation. So we're looking for some help in that area. Next, I'd like to talk about our milk cooperatives. They are all looking to expand, and Martin will soon tell you about our milk capacity across the state for processing. My own co-op, Hastings Dairy, went to the Department of Economic Development. We were thinking of making some changes, but we didn't qualify, because if you build a new plant, it's more efficient labor-wise, water-wise, environmentally, and DEED is about creating jobs, and specifically at that plant. But what happens, the jobs get created downstream on the dairy. On the dairy, as production grows, you need more help. So there's jobs indirectly created when we increase milk plant capacity, even though the milk plant per se, if it maintains the same volume, will not create jobs. So we're looking from a little help from DEED or changing those rules. Next, the environmental side, we're not against any of the environmental regulations, but possibly some streamlining in terms of the permitting process and the high fees you heard about last year in this committee compared to other states. The fourth issue is University of Minnesota Dairy Research, Teaching, and Consumer Education Center in St. Paul. We're continuing to create a public-private partnership to move this forward and asking for reauthorization of the dairy authority. And finally, we want to continue to grow our industry through the Livestock Investment Grant in the Agri Funds. This has helped dozens of new and growing dairies stay in business. Thank you for your time today, and I'll answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Buck, thank you. We toured the Hastings Creamery, was it last summer, I think, on an ag tour. Very impressive. See the milk come in and be processed and go out, and we wish you well with your plans of possible expansion or whatever down there. So, very good. Questions from members. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. I'd like to learn more about the impact of the agri funds on small dairies, and do you have any numbers, or can you explain a little more what the impact of that is on expanding the small dairies?
Mr. Buck?
Chair and committee member, I don't have any exact numbers. I think it is, I'll say, geared towards if you have a next generation coming in, and it's very helpful to get the next generation coming in, because so many times existing farmers, if you're going to have a next generation come in, you either have to expand or do something different, and that's where it's a big benefit to the industry, I think, for the future of the industry.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you're absolutely right with that. In fact, there was an agri grant in my county where that was the concept, to expand the dairy a little bit so more family members can be involved with the operation. Seems to make good sense to me, so thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Follow up, any other questions? Was Mr. Lindeman also going to be here today? I don't see him, but...
Oh, there.
Oh, there
he is. He came in quietly. You're next on the agenda that I have, so Pat, if you want to come down, or whatever you have lined up or planned. have a question. Representative Salk.
I was just curious, before you stand up and leave, this challenge that you're having with DEED is not possibly the right agency, or their model of how to assist in expansion creates a challenge from what you can fit into. I completely understand that efficiency would bring much higher throughput at the dairy than moving backwards to the farms that would be creating the labor. Are there any other agencies, or maybe you've already looked in the assortment of other interested ways to get support for the particular kind of improvement that you're looking at?
Mr. Butt.
You know, and I actually serve on the board there, and we've looked at a lot of different things, and so far haven't found anything that really works for us. We continue to explore all possibilities.
Follow up, Representative? Thank you, Mr. Buck, and carry on, whomever is next on the agenda. And good morning, sir.
Good morning. Pat Luneman from Clarissa, Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dr. Bozick just mentioned to me that maybe I'm on European time because I was 10 minutes late for the committee meeting.
This is not the Senate.
Okay. My sole purpose today was actually to introduce the new leader of the dairy industry in Minnesota, my good friend David Buck from GoodU. And you just heard from him. Dave will do a great job. I had the privilege for about 9-10 years of speaking to this committee just every year as chair of Minnesota Milk. And in December I stepped aside and Dave Buck took over in my role and will serve the dairy industry well. I have a new role in agriculture, and that is as chair of Minnesota AgriGrowth. So we have a farmer from Clarissa, Minnesota that's chairman of the board of Minnesota AgriGrowth, and I hope to serve agriculture well in that capacity in the next year or two. So,
Mr. Luneman, thank you for your years of service. It's been a pleasure all these years to have you come in on Dairy Day here. A good spokesman for Minnesota Milk and the dairy industry, and you're passing the torch to Mr. Buck, and I'm sure he also will do an outstanding job promoting the industry, which is really so key to Minnesota. Dairy really, it's a high capital industry, and you really keep the wheels of commerce moving, especially out in greater Minnesota. So thank you, and good luck in your new role at AgriGrowth, and good luck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Moving on now, we have Maren Bozick. Good morning, sir. You have a PowerPoint. Hopefully it works. And carry on.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's such a privilege to be here back in the House of Representatives. I believe this is my third year that I accompany my good friends that I serve as a dairy economist at the University of Minnesota. My research spans a wide variety of issues all related to dairy industry, from Farm Bill and dairy policy to analyzing issues specific to Minnesota. I also serve as Associate Director of Dairy Foods Research Center and help our processors find new markets for the milk we produce here in the state. I just returned from Florida, where the IDFA, the International Dairy Foods Association, held their annual dairy forum, and the introductory, the chairman lecture there was by General Hyden, the former director of CIA, and he titled his talk "Tectonic Shifts in the World," which inspired me to try to create a presentation for you to present in just a few slides, hopefully visually appealing, what are the tectonic changes in the dairy sector that you as legislators representing agriculture and as well as other citizens of our state that I hope will be aware of and take into consideration as you may deliberate on these issues. So I've singled out maybe four or five major themes, and then after I go through them, I will present some more recent research that we have done on the benefits of dairy sector to the state of Minnesota, and outline some opportunities that await us in the time ahead. We'll also have the privilege to introduce our Dairy Farmer of the Year. So after my PowerPoint, I will play the video introducing their farm, and then I understand they will speak about their farm as well. So the tectonic change number one is that dairy growth is coming back to the upper Midwest. For many decades, from 1970s through mid-2000s, 2007 or 2008, It was California, Idaho. It was the western United States that was growing prominently. And Minnesota, Wisconsin, and upper Midwest, we were losing our place in the whole rank list of major dairy states in the nation. So what you have here, the darker blue means the higher growth, and the red means decline. The colors are apolitical. What you see here is that to our left and to our right, we have South Dakota growing 64% over the last 10 years, and on the other side, Wisconsin growing 27% over the same period. Michigan has also grown over 50% from a much larger base than South Dakota, so quite substantial growth. At the same time, we've seen California falter, and they're still number one state, but they're not growing nearly as much as before. In fact, for the last few years, they have been stagnating and declining in milk production. Numerous factors for this tectonic change. We had a decade of high feed costs, but going forward, the dairy genetics, our cattle, are getting better and better every year, and as they get better, they produce more energy. They have to release the extra heat they generate as they produce milk. So that's why the southeast United States is no longer a good place to milk cows. They just cannot release all that energy, and we cannot utilize all the modern genetics on those farms, and so they lack in productivity and they fall behind. More recently, in the last few years, we have started noticing that even in dry but hot climates, the modern genetics doesn't work. The improvements are not able to be materialized or manifested, which leaves us with the upper Midwest as the ideal region in the United States to milk cows. And we have the climate the cows like, as much as myself coming from Croatia, a Mediterranean country, sometimes in January. I look forward to the Florida meetings. But our cows love this weather, and we are well poised to reap the benefits of modern genetic improvements for years to come. We have the natural resources. The Texas Panhandle, while it's still growing, the Ogallala Aquifer in that part of the nation is drying up. The water tables are being depleted, and it won't be long before processors look to other regions for further investments where water availability is not a risk factor for their investments. So looking at this map, we see that nationwide we are very well positioned to establish Minnesota as a major player on the dairy map. More broadly and globally, when we compete and when we export, we compete with Europe and we compete with New Zealand. While historically New Zealand has been considered as a low-cost producer nation, the additional dairy farmer, now given that they've already developed their islands, the additional dairy farmers would actually have higher costs than Minnesota dairy farmer. So we are well positioned even globally as far as the cost of milk production are concerned. Sometimes there is this debate, what comes first, milk or the plant? Do you need to increase milk and so for processors to come, or should we see processor expand and then the milk will rise in return? What we have seen over the last few years that the definite answer is that milk comes first. Processors are able to choose which regions they will invest, which regions they will place their new greenfield plants, and we are talking about investments that count in hundreds of millions of dollars. Just last Friday, a major investment was announced for Michigan, Glanbia, which is an Irish cooperative here incorporated as a corporation, together with three different cooperatives in Michigan, announced a major American cheese plant that will start operating in the first quarter of 2019. We haven't seen such a major expansion in Minnesota in a long time. We are fortunate that nearly all of our processors are planning to expand their plants or have done so in the last few years. However, the economics still do not warrant a major greenfield investment, and that's something that I hope will change in the next few years as we grow our dairy economy further. So that is my tectonic trend number one. And Mr. Chair, do you think it's better to invite questions as I go along or to wait until the end of the presentation?
I like to ask questions as we go along because they're more timely. And I would just ask you, with the increase in the production, what about the demand for milk nationwide? We rely to an extent on exports. How is all that playing out?
you're three slides ahead of me. Mr. Chair, that is an excellent question. We are facing a maturing market here in the United States, and we are relying more and more on exports. And if you allow me, I will postpone my answer to that. I have a little story on that.
Continue on. I'm sorry. We do have some questions. Vice Chair Backer.
Yeah, Chair and Committee, why would Minnesota be more efficient in milk production compared to New Zealand with their new operation?
Mr. Bozek.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we grow our own feed. We have abundance of feed in our neighborhoods. Even if a new plant, even if a new dairy farm is built, and even if they don't own the land, they will enter into a growing contracts, you know, with their neighbors. Yeah, they will spread manure, and that way, New Zealand is a pasture economy. Their geography favors pasture dairies, and that's why they were able to be low cost producers for a lot of time. They are running out of pastures, and there are only so many sheep you can convert to cows. That's, you don't do that directly, of course.
Follow up, Vice Chair? Vice Chair, follow up?
No, I do
not. Thank you.
Next question, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bozek, I won't ask you about the genetics about that last thing, about how you...
I was just an economist.
Just a couple of very quick questions. So we saw the growth, the graphic on the growth. However, I take it there are other states that are currently, anyway, big producers relative to who we are. I'm still relatively new to all this. Where would that be? Would that be in the Southeast, or is that spread around the nation in terms of who our major competitors, if you will, in terms of states?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members, you are seven slides ahead of me, but I will fast forward just to demonstrate that. So this is listing on the left side. You see the size of the 2015 annual production, and then the list of states. Of California is distinctively number one, even though they're declining. Wisconsin is a state number two, and they are growing both in percentage terms and the absolute pounds rather robustly. Which is a combination of their favorable geographic position as well as the support to state policies. Minnesota is currently number eight. Michigan has surpassed us recently, and they are continuing to grow at a really incredible pace. So Minnesota is among the top 10 states nationwide in terms of dairy production, and among the upper Midwestern states other than Wisconsin, we are number one, followed by Iowa, and then Kansas, South Dakota, and Illinois. On the left side, you see the total production per year. The axes are different, left and right, just to make it more appealing. On the right side, the green, you see that even at 2.3%, we, in absolute pounds, we are growing faster than South Dakota, that's growing at 9%, just because of the difference in size. So whereas you may hear a lot in the press about South Dakota, is anyone here from South Dakota? Can I speak clearly? So
we're not on TV, so.
No tweets, please. So whereas you often hear South Dakota moving aggressively to recruit new producers and new processors as well, when you put pound to pound, Minnesota's 2.3% is still bigger than South Dakota's 9%. Of course, when I give talks to South Dakota, these slides look differently. But regionally, we are a leader. Minnesota and Wisconsin are leaders in upper Midwest together with Michigan, and we are really well poised to keep that leadership in place.
Representative Mariani.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. You had to jump ahead in your slides. Maybe this one won't be, but this question. But just a very quick thing. You mentioned the Oglala Reservoir, where apparently in other states that's become a risk factor for them. Obviously, we need water, for this production. What is it that is it just a quirk of geology that we're better, if you will, relative to that risk factor, or are we doing things in the state differently relative to maintaining water levels, et cetera?
Dr. Bozek?
I think, Mr. Chair, committee members, I think it's a combination of factors. I think our ability to recharge while our aquifers is different. But again, I am an economist, not a geologist or hydrologist. But my understanding is that our water resources are much more sustainable than the other states, especially those states where the Ogallala Aquifer is shallow, you know, because it also varies in depth. Nebraska would have, some parts of Nebraska would have it deeper than parts of Texas or Kansas.
Thank you.
Question from Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Going back to the migration of the dairy industry, this movement within the United States, and over the past 20 years, there was for a while real concern in Minnesota that we seem to see dairy production migrating out of Minnesota right next door to our neighbors. So obviously, South Dakota would appear to have benefited from that. We also saw plants show up there that we sure would have liked to have in Minnesota. Could you comment on that's a little more of a regional migration thing? I suspect some of us are sure that some of the regulation that Minnesota imposed on our dairy operations and the plants contributed to that. Is that just my imagination or like your idea about more of a regional focus as to what's going on there and has it changed?
It certainly isn't just our imagination, Mr. Chair. It's certainly not just imagination. We have seen a difference in overall attitude in South Dakota. They are much more aggressive in acquiring new producers. For a number of years, they would even travel to Europe to try to bring folks from Ireland or Netherlands that would not be able to expand in their home countries. So as immigrants to South Dakota, they tried very hard to expand their production there. They also have a number of proactive policies where rather than wait for a dairy producer to apply for a permit, they would go out and visit different sites and predetermine which sites would be favorable for permitting so that to further streamline that. They're currently in a position where 43,000 animal units are permitted but not built, and they're just waiting for a new dairy processing plant to come in, and then a number of new dairies will pop up or expand. We have seen a strong enthusiasm in Minnesota in the last 5 years. It's a correlation and not causation that I came to the state at exactly that time in 2011. You know, but you know, we have seen a number of dairies in Minnesota expand. We are not losing cows anymore. We are at stable at 460,000. In fact, I would even argue that we have perhaps grown a little bit since. But just like everywhere, we will see further consolidation. We will see continued trends towards and pressure towards more efficiency, implementation of modern technologies, modern management practices, modern cow breeds, etc. Mr. Chair, I propose that I go for a few more slides, and maybe we can then open for questions again.
We have a couple more questions. They may be on the same topic. Can we
get
to those right now? Representative Norness.
I can actually wait if you want to do that. It's more of a general question. So,
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, Representative Rook's question got to the answer I was looking for. So, thanks.
Very good. Carry on, Dr. Bozick.
Mr. Chair, the tectonic trend number two is that the milk fat is back. For a number of years, in fact, for a number of decades, fat was considered a villain that would make folks obese. And we were told that we should eat low-fat food instead, and low-fat food more often than not meant high-sugar food. So we didn't really do a good job explaining the full effect of nutritional consequences of that substitution. As a consequence, the United States now consumes less than half of the butter, for example, than France, and has the 2.5 times higher obesity rate. So the link between the fat consumption and obesity is not at all significant in statistical sense. In the last few years, partially due to the good work that Dairy Checkoff is doing, there has been a monumental change in the consumer attitude towards milk fat. You have often heard stories how the fluid milk consumption is on decline. That's indeed the case still. But if you look at the numbers for the year just behind us, 2016, whole fat milk nationwide is up 5% year over year, and now it constitutes 34% over the overall sector. yogurt was your archetypical low-fat food, and whole-fat yogurts, in fact, are up 20% year, 21.3% year over year. In fact, even cheese that has been growing at maybe 1 to 2% a year, last year the whole-fat cheeses are up 3.2%, and there's movement towards more natural cheeses and away from processed cheeses as well. So as the consumer opinions about milk fat changes, it will drive up all the dairy product channels, not just butter, which is the typical story you hear maybe in press, but also yogurt, milk, as well as cheese, and anything that has milk fat as part of the food matrix, as a food system in the product. We have tried to, for many decades, our strategy for selling fluid milk, and I'm going to go a little bit more extreme, that is indeed the case, but just to be more colorful in comments, we have almost tried shaming consumer into drinking milk. You have to do it because it's good for you. It's healthy. Well, now it's not just healthy. It actually tastes really good. Yeah, if you can drink whole fat milk without any feeling of guilt, then you can really enjoy it. And that is driving sales. Going forward, we see that the extrapolating the trends over the next 10 years, we anticipate additional butterfat demand just from the United States being sufficient to absorb all additional milk fat pounds that we will produce by increase in cow genetics and better management practices. So we can absorb over 30 billion pounds worth of milk just from milk fat. The big question is whether we can absorb that much in protein and lactose as well, which is what comes together with milk, because when you increase one, you increase the other as well. So butterfat is not a problem anymore. It's a big boost for dairy producer prices over the last few years as well. Unfortunately, our milk powder prices have been very low due to low world prices, and what has been preserving farm equity for many people in this room are high cheese and butter prices here domestically as well. So I would say that this is a tectonic change number two that's going to be with us for decades, and it's going to make a major impact on what is produced and what is consumed in this country. Okay. The change number three has to deal with exports, and that is the question that you, Mr. Chair, asked. So our cows, this is our fundamental equation. Our cows are getting better at a rate of about 1.5 to 2% a year, which means that the next generation cow that you bring into herd next year is going to be about 2% better than their mothers in the previous generation. And it's been like that for many, many years. In fact, since the World War II, we've been about 1.5 to 2%, more milk per cow every year. Our population, on the other hand, the United States population is growing at a rate of 0.9% a year, which creates this permanent pressure on where do we place our milk. There are several ways you can address that. You can increase per capita consumption of milk, and indeed people in the United States have been eating more and more cheese ever since the 1970s when we discovered pizza. So that is one way that you can address it. But the other major channel that has been the stabilizing factor from World War II to mid-2000s has been reduction in U.S. dairy cows. We ended the World War II with 23 million dairy cows in this country, with over 1 million dairy producer families. By mid-2000s, we were down to 9.1 million cows. Every decade, every few years, maybe there would be a year that it goes down, up or down a little bit, but the trend was steadily downward. That stabilized in mid-2000s. Why did it stabilize? If you look at the red line, that is exactly when the exports took off. We are relying on exports to keep our dairy families in business, even though in Minnesota, most of our products goes domestically, just because of our geographic location. So over the last 10 years, we have gotten to a point that all our dairy cows in this nation work one day a week just for exports. In fact, we're not quite sure which day it is. On the other hand, we are more than 60% of all the increase in milk over the last 10 years has gone to exports. Exports are supremely important. I can tell you that based on my conversations at the dairy forum earlier this week, There's a lot of concerns about the new federal policy and the new approach to trade. Dairy is the major beneficiary of free trade arrangements that we have with Mexico. Mexico is one of our biggest export markets, as well as the various Asian markets. And we all hope that the U.S. will act prudently and will proceed with amending trade policies in a thought-through going forward. We are relying on exports. Without exports, we will revert back to declining dairy herds, as we had for the previous many decades. So I would say that that's the tectonic change number three, that we are relying on exports, whereas traditionally U.S. has been focused on internal markets for the most part. Take out.
Question from Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing up the state is interesting to me, but also the current challenge. I think a lot of us in Minnesota are concerned about what we've seen over the last week. And I know it's a short timeline as of now, but is there some sort of a coordinated response, or is there a kind of a response that the dairymen in America are creating or using to respond to what appears to be a tightening of borders and possible tariffs and trade wars and that sort of thing? It would have a huge impact on dairy and other commodities.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we all live in a different part of the ecosystem of the dairy industry. My job as a dairy economist, academic dairy economist, is to provide analysis and quantify effects of different scenarios. And then my friend Dave Buck is the one that should coordinate the efforts and make sure that we don't mess it up with the trade policy. But I will tell you that based on my conversations in Florida, there is a widespread concerns, and the alliances are being formed to communicate our message, communicate the message of the dairy industry to the responsible elected officials in the Washington D.C. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Borzek, you mentioned the word pizza, or cheese and pizza, and there's a big football game coming up this weekend. And I read someplace that Americans will consume something like 2 billion chicken wings. Does pizza take a spike as well over Super Bowl weekend?
Super Bowl is, Mr. Chair, Super Bowl is a major draw for cheese sales, and yeah, definitely that's a big event for us. It's a big event for us.
Okay. Other questions? Want to wait, Representative? Okay, go ahead, Mr. Bozick.
I want to just have a few slides on what's going to happen this year and next. This is the regular part of what I present in front of this committee when I testify. So what we had over the last few years, you see this sea of blue in 2014 and 2015. That is the European Union. After 30 years, they have decided to allow their dairy producers to produce as much milk as any one of them may wish to do, just like dairy producers in Minnesota have the liberty to do so. As a consequence, the world was awash in milk, and the prices for milk fell down in 2015, and continued to decline in 2016. It was only in the last few months that they finally stabilized. Europe is finally at a point where the first wave of investments after the liberalization of the dairy market passed, and now they're trying to catch a breath. We have some dairy farmers retiring. The European Commission is trying to introduce various measures to disincentivize further milk production. And also we find that in Netherlands there will be additional restrictions regarding the dairy production because of some environmental reasons, so for different reasons than economic policy. U.S. is the only major exporter that's still expected to grow this year. Both New Zealand and Europe are licking their wounds from years past, if you will, and trying to replenish their equity. We are in a comparatively better position because of our strong cheese butter markets in last 2 years. So I do expect to see some continued growth in the United States, not so much in Europe and New Zealand. As a consequence, our dairy prices, and what's most important, the incomes of the good people here in the room, will recover this year to a point that they may reduce some of the loans that they had to take over the last 2 years to make it all function well on their farms. My forecast for I've already shown these two slides, so I will skip them. My forecast for 2017 is for Minnesota to continue growing at 1.5%, which is our historical average, so basically maintaining the dairy herd at a stable level, which does not mean status quo. That just means that we will continue to see some dairy farms decide to sell the cows and other dairy farms decide to expand as they bring in new family members to the farm. Minnesota is going to continue growing at 1.5%. South Dakota is expected to grow at 6.7%, so good growth in our region this year. And milk prices are expected to recover about $1.50 to $2, depending on some factors that may materialize yet this year that we are uncertain of. But now, all of this was, of course, contingent on business-as-usual trade policies. If we do see some major shifts in trade policies, if we do impose some border tax on Mexico, it is not out of question that Mexico may retaliate by imposing quotas or tariffs on U.S. dairy products and try to import them from other countries. That would amend this price scenario substantially and would induce hardship on dairies across the nation, including Minnesota. The next part of my presentation switches gears again, and I would like to outline in a few numbers what Minnesota the dairy sector is and what it means to the state, how much jobs does it create and total economic activity. This is a slide that I presented last year, I'm sure you all remember. And what we have in state is 71 plants. We have 15 major or minor cheese plants. There are four plants that can produce milk powder. We don't have major milk powder plants, certainly not big commodity powder plants. Butter is produced in six facilities. One of them is a major producer of butter, 17 in fluid milk, and then very robust secondary processing dairy ingredients. Those are the plants that take in not raw milk, but already some processed dairy goods and commodities and then process them further. In 2015, we had 3,470 dairy farms, according to USDA. I haven't seen the most recent numbers from David, but I assume that we are now about 3,300, somewhere thereabouts, about 3,300 dairy farms. Last summer, we started working, and this is now preliminary results, for a study that delineates the economic impact on Minnesota dairy sector to the state. We differentiate several different effects there. The direct effect would be the direct economic effect. It bears no further explanation. The indirect effect is that when you expand a farm, you start buying some inputs from your neighbors, and the economic activity generated through buying inputs or services from other suppliers, that's the indirect effect. And then the induced effect is that the folks that actually work for dairy farms will have increased income as a consequence of new business ventures, and then they will spend that income on other goods and services produced here in Minnesota. So we differentiate direct, indirect, and induced effect on total economic activity. This is in millions of dollars. So when you sum them up, we are talking about almost $11 billion in total economic activity in the state. We are looking at 31,000 jobs created directly or indirectly because of the presence of US dairy, of the Minnesota dairy sector, and we are looking at a labor income of exceeding $2 billion. When you look at how each cow performs, the total economic activity generated by a single dairy cow exceeds $20,000, with value added being close to $8,000. To put that in some perspective, a price of a dairy cow is three to four times smaller than the value added that the animal creates every year. So it's amazing amount of value added relative to the price of that input or price of that animal that is used. But beyond the numbers, the story of Minnesota dairy sector would be incomplete if we don't talk about their people. And so I just want to give a shout out to a few dairy families. very recent, the U.S. Industry decided to start presenting awards for sustainability practices for innovative dairies that have changed something about the way they do business to increase sustainability of their dairy, better management of resources. It is quite fascinating that over the last 3 years, there's only two or three of these awards awarded every year. In the last 3 years, every year Minnesota had one farm that won the award. In 2014, it was Marshall Dairy, in 2015, Dorridge, and then the 2016, Geraldine Farms. The most prestigious award that a dairy farmer in the United States can get is that, one of the most prestigious awards anyway, is the Innovative Dairy Farm of the Year. It's presented at this dairy forum, which is the biggest event of the dairy industry that spans the entire supply chain. And I had tremendous pleasure in seeing good folks from Geraldine Farms win this award and receive it just 2 days ago in Florida. So congratulations to all the dairy farms in the state. We have tremendous human potential here. There are some other major things happening in the state that did not receive the awards, but I think are also in the rank of perhaps even tectonic changes. One of our farms here in the state, Riverview Farms, has developed a whole new business model where they now have over 300 community members that are co-owners of their dairy, and the employees as well that work for them have the opportunity to be co-owners as well. So whereas in years past we have innovated through building cooperatives or partnerships, one of the business models of the future is emerging right here in Minnesota. And Riverview can, I think perhaps that they are, in terms of their business model, I don't know of any dairy farm, maybe one, that is as innovative as they are around the nation. So not just the land of contribution and hard work, but land of sustainability and innovation, Minnesota dairy sector. So I think I'm going to stop there.
Yeah, we have a couple of questions.
Yes.
And I just would have to add that two of those farms are in my district, so very proud of that. Question from Representative Kunish Kodi.
Thank you, Chair. Question about employment. Given the low employment unemployment that we have in the state, are farms fully employed? Are they having a hard time finding folks to come work on their farms? And if you could maybe, I don't know if you know this, but what is the average wage for somebody that comes in and helps out on a farm?
Chair, committee members, I will defer to the second question to Dave if he would like to maybe join me later here. He will have the most updated numbers. As far as the first question goes, yes, there is an increasing probability that maybe even the workers that you have will look for opportunities down the road, either some other dairy or in some other sector as well. It is a labor risk. I would say that the most two biggest risks, in addition to price risk or feed risk, the two biggest risks for dairy farm in this state are probably labor availability and then health insurance costs. Mm-hmm. Health insurance costs have been skyrocketing recently, and I've heard very terrible stories on folks that had health insurance for decades before it was universal, and now that it's universal, they no longer have it. And the rising cost of health insurance and how it impinges on dairy profitability are troubling to me, and I'm actually thinking of doing some research on that in the next few years to look into it further. And the other risk is labor risk. We now have a number of dairy farms that are exploring expanding through increased automation and use of robotic milkers, just to reduce their exposure to potential risk of not being able to maintain or retain new employees. Dave, would you like to add?
Mr. Bott, Chair Anderson and committee members, I'll just speak in maybe general terms, but the labor situation is difficult right now. I recently read somewhere Southeast Minnesota has a 2.9% unemployment rate. 4% is considered full employment. This is driving, as Marn alluded to, looking at robotics. And it's just, it's difficult. Last summer milk prices were low, to compete with other industries for labor. That's kind of what's driving this robot situation, I think. That's basically why we're looking for some immigration reform at the federal level to get people in here that can work. And it's not that we're paying minimum wage by any means. In our area, the minimum wage is irrelevant. You don't hire anybody for minimum wage. You know, we're probably 30% above minimum wage just to get somebody to walk in the door with no prior experience. So labor is a challenge, but like everything else, we'll figure it out and get through it.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Bozick or Mr. Botek?
Bozick.
Bozick. I said it wrong either way, so I apologize for that. You kind of stole my thunder. You went ahead to my slide on the Riverview, and I just want to kind of support what Riverview is doing because they have multiple establishments in my area. They just opened one last year up near Pennock, and they're getting started on another one nearby. I don't know exactly how public, but let's say another one. And they do have a very unique model that I encourage if people ever get a chance. The one up near Pennock, they had an open house for the community, and now they serve burgers, so that attracts a lot of people. They were expecting, I thought they might see 500-600 people. They were expecting 3,000. They had over 5,000 people show up for the day to look at the tour. But it's an incredible operation. What I really like about it is they incorporate the community, not only in ownership, but understand that the land, that the growers there in the area are now having a way to send their feed or their alfalfa. It's multiple economies that are building on top of themselves. There's actually like sub-companies, I guess I would say. Thank you. Is that better? Now you just can't hear me at all, which was, is that a clue to stop talking? So, but anyway, I really encourage people that when they get an opportunity to look at that model, because I think they have tapped into something, like you said, that I think is going to be a way that this industry can grow, because I think it's going to. And then I will put a plug in. When you say health insurance is a major problem, we did pass my ag cooperative health insurance plan last year, which is something that they're going to be able to tap into to be able to provide that insurance out in rural areas. So that's an area that we might be able to help with that as well. And I probably need to be talking to someone in the dairy industry about that soon. So thanks for that reminder.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bozick and Mr. Book. Representative Kunish, Pauline opened up, excuse me, a couple of questions I wanted to delve into, and Mr. Book, you also got into that, and that is trying to get a handle on what is the profile of our labor force in this industry. My understanding is that that there is a substantial number of immigrants that do this work. What is that? I don't have a feel for how much that is, what has been the trend. And then maybe just because you opened it up a little bit, Mr. Book, you spoke about the need for some kind of immigration reform to be able to play a part in the health of this industry. Without great detail, what would that look like for you?
Mr. Hawk, you want to tackle that one?
Just briefly, possibly. currently, immigration laws were geared more towards southern states, vegetable pickers. The people would come in, get a 10-month visa, then leave. Dairying is 24/7, 365. There's not really a program geared towards that I'm aware of, and I think that would, you know, that's probably the first thing that comes to my mind if we are looking for change.
Follow up, Representative?
I'm just wondering if what are the macro numbers in terms of what this labor force looks like relative to immigration labor?
That is an important question. Unfortunately, I have not done research on that, and the literature on that topic is not very abundant.
Well, Mr. Chair, we as a committee may want to wrap our hands around that issue, particularly in a year where as Representative Johnson indicated or shared earlier relative to trade policy, where there may be some new directions emerging from the new administration relative to immigration issues. And it seems to me our ability to get on top of that early is going to be vitally important for a number of our sectors, industrial sectors and production sectors in the state, including this one. So it'd be great if you can help me, you know, be able to dig out, you know, where I might be able to go to get a feel for what that labor force looks like relative to immigrant status.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I can provide you with a study that looked at that nationally, but I'm not sure that they broke down the numbers by state.
Thank you.
And we have had some discussions. In fact, there was a bill last year, the H-2A program. Is that the one you're referring to about the employer provides the airfare for folks to come over from other countries, provide housing, and to pay the wages? And there are discussions about a change of that here in Minnesota. But that's a program that is available to get some of these workers in. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chairman, I do recall that bill, and I had a pretty good visit recently with some of the advocates who are looking at perhaps a different approach to that. But I do think it's important, and I'm sorry I mispronounced your name, Mr. Buck. I apologize. I know a book, and so it sounds like that the uniqueness of this industry, however, doesn't lend itself to an H-2A type approach, which is a seasonal approach. You're looking for year-round, 24/7, you know, stability relative to labor, and so I think H-2A plays a role, a vital role for other parts of our ag sector, but perhaps not one that's going to be applicable here.
Yeah, good point. Representative Norris, you can pop in now.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Bozek, appreciate your comments. It's positive. It's good to hear that it's a brighter future, maybe for dairy. I should add one thing, that last weekend I visited with a family who just moved into a habitat house, a new home, in Fergus Falls, where I live, and he told me he earns $13 an hour working on a dairy farm. So I don't know if that's average or total or where that's at, but they're a very happy family, that family of five, moving into the new home. And I'm not sure I still have a question. I just want to make a couple of quick comments. Again, I live in Otter Tail County, where we've got a lot of history of dairy farming. We had a dairy in Fergus Falls at one time. There were many years, good jobs. It closed. It was a cheese plant. Now I see you were talking about a new cheese plant coming on board, and it just seems unfortunate that ours is no longer, and it went away. What concerns me a little bit, I had a call or an email from a constituent who had visited with an FFA student who wanted to be in dairy. Their family was small dairy, and this person wanted to continue, and they were told that they were too small and they would no longer be eligible to have their milk picked up. I think that's been resolved a little bit, but it seems sort of contrary to, if it's a growing industry, it really discourages producers if there's no way to get their product to a market, unless they do the old-fashioned way with a cream can and put it in the back of the pickup. It just seems like hopefully we can turn away the discouragement that might be there in some of these rural areas. And again, I wish our plant could come back to life, but it's beyond that. So I just wonder if you had any comments.
Mr. Chair, committee members, there are multiple paths to owning your piece of land and owning your own dairy. Starting from a tie stall and then growing is just one of them. Today, a person that is sometimes referred to as a Warren Buffett of dairy, Mike McCloskey, the owner of a brand that you may have seen in your stores as a Fairlife, the new high-protein milk, he started on as a veterinarian. And because he was very good, he was soon a co-owner of a dairy and then owner of a few dairies, and now he owns multiple dairies as well as a dairy company. I've met some of the folks that are second in command, if you will, on large dairies, and very soon they will become owners and perhaps an entrepreneurs later that will own larger sizable business enterprises. Perhaps some traditional paths are becoming more challenging, but certainly the doors are not closed on folks on young folks that are looking to get engaged in their industry and contribute and have entrepreneurial spirit be fully manifested through the industry. But you know, new times sometimes ask for examination of new business models in pursuit of that.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to conclude by saying that it isn't often that testifiers come to our committees with good news, and I appreciate you being here. So.
That's what they pay me for.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's go back to that employment issue. Early nursing experience actually has been 7-8 years ago. I had a family member, daughter-in-law, actually worked in the embassy in Mexico in the visa section doing the administrative application process, and she wasn't from originally Minnesota, and she wasn't a farm girl. But she was dealing with a lot of visa applications that dealt with agriculture, and including Minnesota. And I'll just I'll repeat her question of about 8 years ago. She we were talking on the phone. She said, "Dad, doesn't anybody train people in milking cows anymore in Minnesota?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Well, I'm looking at the education background on these on the folks that are trying to come to the United States in general, but even Minnesota, and they've got equivalent to junior college here and a lot of dedicated training." And you know, so I'll just repeat the question 8 years later. Not quite that sarcastic, but are we doing a proper job in training our own people? It's not as simple as milking cows, as some of us did that years ago. It's a pretty complicated technical business, and do we have the right educational foundation for this for our own people? I guess is a little more or less flippant way to ask the question, but I was asked that question 8 years ago, and I'm not sure we're doing the right thing yet here on education.
Mr. Buck.
Chair Anderson and committee members, you know, there's a wide variation in dairy farmers. We're a very diverse group. Some are sole proprietors, and they have to know how to do everything. They got to make sure the books are balanced. They got to know how to feed a cow, what a sick cow is. As the industry has grown, or as farms have grown, there's more specialization in the jobs on a dairy farm. One guy is the cow guy, we call him, and every larger has that guy. And you also have the machinery guy that does the feeding on that. So, you know, there's training in education in the United States for those different areas. Just simply to put a milker on a cow, I don't know that that's, you know, and in the future I think the robots are going to be doing a lot of that. So as time goes forward, dairy industry is going to become more technical, and the people that are in it are going to need more training, because it's not going to be just putting a milker on a cow or putting some feed in front of her.
Yeah, like all of ag, it's becoming much more specialized. Representative Salk.
That brings up an interesting thing. I was curious, Ms. Bozek, on your reflections of how the industry has scaled itself, scale in terms of size and or financial structure, also the way the model is changing itself, and are there still more on points along that scale, or is it becoming such a accumulated or kind of condensed market model, which is sort of what I heard here, is that pretty soon we have what I would perceive as being this very vulnerable vertical that is so complex, so dependent on efficiencies and volume and small margin, that it's also very fracture responded. The least little thing across the world will cause the whole thing to get into jeopardy. The opposite of that, in my perspective, back when I grew up on a dairy farm and the labor force was the children, and, you know, we, on a bad day with a big snowstorm, we all got out there and had to hand milk 37 cows instead. You know, so the scale model and the margin that was available has clearly gone through a curve. Are there places where people can still get on that curve, and or are we, without the ability to affect it, moving toward a relatively vulnerable, very vertical industry structure?
Mr. Bozek.
Mr. Chair, committee members, there are opportunities on the both ends of that scale, I would say. What is becoming harder is to try to be just a commodity player and be in the middle of the scale. So on the smaller side, you have a lot of folks that are pursuing organic or value-added milks of some kind. The Redhead Creamery is one example, for example, where they're adding value to the milk by making cheese on the farm itself. Others are perhaps selling cow genetics in addition to milk and having that as a revenue stream on their farm. So the farms in the 100 to 200 cow range that mostly rely on family labor are doing fine just yet. The question is, you know, how will they ensure sustainability over generations? But the very large farms are also able to negotiate better input prices because of their size. They are able to explore labor efficiencies because they can have just one hospital cow unit that can serve multiple pens or dairies. And so they can reap some efficiencies. What we will start seeing over the next 5 years or so is the first wave of mid-sized dairies, 500, 600, 700, 800 cow dairies in Minnesota, they were built in early 90s. And their principals are now contemplating the next phase in their life. Some of them will not have the next generation willing to take over the reins. So whereas traditionally we have seen smaller tie-style barns being the ones that exit the industry, over the next 5 years we will see some of the mid-sized dairies in Minnesota as well. Maybe 5 to 10 years, we will see some of the mid-sized dairies as well exit industry. I appreciate your comment on how fragile the system can become when it's only driven by efficiency. Not sure if you're familiar with the work of Nassim Taleb. He wrote the Black Swan and then Anti-Fragile. The man made a career on exactly the ideas that you suggested. And there is a lot to be said about that. Michigan, for example, who is growing very fast because of some very ambitious and Dutch culture, if you will, as well, that's driven by growth there. If there is a dairy that's going to go bankrupt, you can put your finger on Michigan. That would be your best guess, because they leverage highly, and they're sometimes not very good at risk management, and then when the prices dip, they go belly up. Certainly the system driven just by those dairies that are driven just by efficiencies and do not leave enough slack or enough, some inbuilt natural hedges may find themselves in a precarious position when circumstances change. And that also maybe is a story of California dairy industry as well, to some extent.
We have to move along. We have one more question, and then we move along to the oddies. Proprietor Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I just wanted to thank Minnesota Milk for coming today and for the presentation. And thank you for the treats. It's always wonderful to have Minnesota Milk Day at the Capitol, because it's just it's great to serve on Ag Committee, and it's great to get the treats. So thank you for that. Thank you for the work that you do 24/7, 365, because you do feed all of us. And I appreciate the presentation. I love butter, and I use it often, and I'm glad to be able to do it without guilt now. So that was also a nice, so thank you for that. And I just wanted to say also, could we just get a copy of the presentation?
Yes, of course.
So if we could have that, some of the details, it would be good to be able to.
And I'll hold it at your service if you'd like to follow
up. Very good. So thank you.
Very good. Are we winding up?
Mr. Chair, would you like me to play the video?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. So this is the video of what's happening to audio. I could try narrating, but that wouldn't be it. We tested this before. But.
Okay, I think. Just really cool to be a part of. I think it's pretty incredible.
I'll just keep on plugging it every 5 minutes.
Wait to pay off that. It's been real, just really cool to be a part of. I think it's pretty incredible what they've done over the last 20.
Mr. Chair, I propose that we move to inviting others to come here. Unfortunately, technology cooperated 90% of the way. But last moment.
Yeah, the video looked very interesting. So would the audience please come up and we'll talk to you in person.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Miller,
that's a YouTube video. Can you just tell us what the link is or whatever, real quick, and we can all watch that too.
Yes, if you just Google Midwest Dairy OTTE Farm, you will get that video. Yes.
Okay, very good.
I apologize for it. We did try to test it before. We did not anticipate it to fail after 5 seconds. That's the
And we can get that sent out to members later, and it may not be your fault. It may be our sound system here. Let's have a bill for a new sound system in this room.
We'll put chairs, too.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Mr. Buck.
Before I give up my seat to the audience, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before and thank Martin for all the input that he has. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you for coming down, getting out of chores today, and being in St. Paul. So Tyler and Kelsey, welcome. Sit down. And you're going to have to memorize what you said in the video and tell us all about it. Identify yourselves and proceed.
That was a long time ago. Hopefully you can remember. No. Dave mentioned before, I'm Tyler, and this is my wife, Kelsey. We appreciate the opportunity to be here, of course, obviously. This year we were fortunate enough to be named Minnesota Milk Producers of the Year, along with my parents, Blake and Christine Addy. We milked 450 cows just south of here in Randolph, Minnesota, about 45 minutes south, the south end of Dakota County. My parents first purchased the land that we built the dairy on in 96, and we built the dairy in 97. So, like Maren Bozick mentioned before, we are part of that, you know, that 20-plus, almost 20 years now we've been around, and the next generation is coming around. This previous June, I decided to come back to the farm, so now I'll be the sixth generation dairy farmer on our family's dairy. We both attended the University of Minnesota. We both got our undergrads there. I majored in dairy science, or animal production, so with an emphasis in dairy science.
Kelsey, welcome.
Thank you. I didn't have to say anything in the video, so I don't have to remember anything.
Well, you're on the spot now. Identify yourself, and what's it like being a wife and on a dairy farm?
I'm fortunate to have a very good relationship with Blake and Chickie. Like Tyler mentioned, we just came back to the farm in June after college. He spent 2 years managing another dairy to get experience working under other people and working in different settings. I work off the farm, which gives me at a local bank as a credit analyst, which I think gives me a different perspective rather than just being on the farm. At some point down the road, Tyler and I dream buying our portion of the farm together. He has two brothers, and someday hopefully the three of them and our families will be able to farm together.
I have a question from Representative Miller.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, really a statement. I believe we've talked about
I'm the problem this whole day, just so you know. Probably every day, right? So let's just do that. So I just want to say that I believe that, Mr. Chair, that the average age we talk about of a farmer is 57 in the state of Minnesota. And I would argue that the two of you are much younger than the age of 57. So thank you very much for bringing that that bell curve down and bring it down. I believe that beginning farmers, that's something that's near and dear to me. And I believe bringing young people back into agriculture. When I hear that you moved back home to do this, makes it even more exciting for me. So this is really a thanks more than a question. I appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tyler, some of the challenges in dairying today.
Some of the challenges, like we mentioned before, being part of that Southeast Minnesota, we do struggle with employment once in a while. We consistently always have really, really well-educated and well-prepared. We try to manage our employees the best we can and teach them on everything we want them to do as well. But we're always looking for another employee. We always seem to be an employee short. But that's just something that we always deal with. Otherwise, being so close to the metro is probably the other interesting fact we have to deal with. Not that it's a problem, but it's always it's another thing that we have to handle compared to other dairies that might be not as located near to the suburbs as we are.
Okay.
Kelsey, go ahead.
Mr. Chair. Like Tyler said, that the farm's sometimes always an employee short, but we also have very good employee retention. If you look through the employees, we have employees that have been there for 12 to 15 years. So it's not like we're turning over all of our employees, but, you know, there is certainly a chunk that seems to constantly turn over.
Very good. And congratulations on the award you received this year. Any other questions from members? If not, thank you much, and congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was going to ask this question earlier, but I bet you guys can help me with this. One of the things is, you know, we often talk about farmers being good stewards of the land, and I think dairy farmers are particularly good stewards of the land, partly because of the use of alfalfa and the importance of alfalfa, which is a perennial. We know perennials are a working lands opportunity that's golden in Minnesota, and really, particularly with nitrates, is very impactful. If you could just describe where you get your alfalfa, do you grow it yourself, and describe how you address that in your dairy.
On the agronomy side of our...
Mr. Roddy, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. On the agronomy side of our farm, we run 1,500 acres, and 500 of that is alfalfa. Always, we need all 500 of that acres to feed our cows all year long. We also are fortunate enough to raise all of our heifers as well, so with almost 1,000 animals between our sites, we need that alfalfa, so we definitely stay on top of making sure we have good quality alfalfa. We rotate it every 4 years between land. I mean, there's always land that's always becoming alfalfa as well as tilling up to becoming corn, but we always have 500 acres, and we're in that four-year rotation on that.
Very good. Follow up?
Thank you. Maybe you're not the right gentleman to ask this of, but I'm wondering also about the importing alfalfa from other states. Are we seeing that, maybe I should have asked that before, but are we seeing that increasing or declining? Are we getting more local alfalfa consumed in the dairy farms across the state of Minnesota?
Well, that's kind of an annual thing. I would just add quickly that it was a pretty good year for alfalfa this year. A lot of rain, heat units, and almost a surplus of good quality hay. Would you agree with that, Mr. Roddy?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and committee members, we definitely saw an increase in quantity as well as quality of alfalfa. I mean, we produce probably, we take 5 cuttings of alfalfa a year, and we definitely saw an increase in all of our cuttings of alfalfa in the quality that we have, as well as the quantity. We were actually able to sell some dry hay this year, which we normally aren't able to do. It all depends on the growing season, obviously, that we happen to have this surplus. But I would say the majority of dairy farmers probably, if they're able to, want to produce their own alfalfa because it's easier to produce higher quality alfalfa from yourself instead of trying to pay a premium to buy imported alfalfa.
Thank you much. We have to move along now. We have a couple of reports coming. But to the Addies, thank you much. And again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's hear about the, let's give them a hand. Next report on the agenda is the Dairy Research Education and Consumer Outreach Authority report. That was an old friend from Chicago, I believe. Good morning. Identify yourselves and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Kurt Zimmerman. I work for the Ag Marketing Division with the Minnesota Department of Ag. I'm a livestock supervisor, so I have a chance to work with the people that raise our food every day. And one of the real joys of my job is working with these dairy farmers, and Dairy Day at the Capitol is important. In my job, we have Dairy Day every day at the department. I just wanted to introduce this report and then turn it over to one of our board members. You should have a copy of the Dairy Authority legislative report. It was just finalized here this past week. Just in background, this authority was brought into being in 2012, and I'm almost positive that Representative Anderson, you were chief sponsor of this when it got started.
Yep.
I just wanted to report, and my role with the group has been to administrate the meetings and to gather the information and to help the group meet. This group has taken their job very seriously. We have four active dairy producers that are part of our board, and they're listed in your report. We have two that represent or are presidents of dairy processing plants in the state. We have the dean of the University of Minnesota. We have a representative of Ridgewater and also representing Minsky. We have a very talented group that meets, and when we call a meeting, they show up. In the early years, we basically tried to get our arms around the needs and what we were going to do. We visited dairy research facilities around the Minnesota area. We visited four in Wisconsin, Marshfield, Arlington, River Falls, and Madison, two in Iowa, Kalmar, Iowa, and Ames, and also in Brookings. Basically, not only just to see these facilities, but also ask some questions, how they were built, how they were financed, operating expenses, what they do differently. And then we put together our ideas, and in 2015, a feasibility study was put together and some direction and a path was formulated. This past year has been a transition year for the group as we move beyond the information gathering stage and now move toward how we get something like this to become reality in the state. Greg Jans, a dairy producer and also past member of Minnesota Milk and a current board member of the Dairy Authority, is here to talk a little bit about our most recent activity, and he'd be glad to answer any questions. If you have any specific questions about the report, my phone number is on the very front page, and I'd be glad to respond to that after the meeting. So with that, I'd like to introduce Greg Jans.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Greg Jans. Along with my son, Joe, we operate Kojo Dairy, which is located about 80 miles west of here, north of the little town of Grove City. So my son is kind of transitioning into the dairy operation. It was kind of interesting with some of the conversation going on beforehand and stuff, and how every operation has a different structure and stuff, and ours by far does too, but it's kind of a traditional operation. As far as a little more history on the Dairy Authority, for several years we were working kind of from the Minnesota Milk basis, trying to encourage the university to modernize their facilities on the St. Paul campus. And at that time, that wasn't the direction they were actually looking to go, probably is the thing that we got, plus it took a big investment. So we created the Dairy Authority, and I think that was a good thing. So what we were directed to do as a Dairy Authority was to look at and procure a site, and we started out looking at outstate Minnesota. And as things evolved over it, as Kurt mentioned, we toured all these other facilities. They all had a different purpose. Some had a combination, but we figured there was three purposes that we were going to look at: research, education, and outreach. and we kind of prioritized those. And the committee thought the most important thing, first of all, was research. So going back to the university and stuff, because we knew they had to be a partner on this. And then we got talking about maybe we could locate this facility right on campus. So then that's at the time that we did this feasibility study. And it worked out when we were done that we can put this research, teaching, and education facility right on the campus. So that's what we came with. And so as of now, the university is we're hopefully we can get it bonded next year. But that's a long ways to go yet because right now we're doing the private fundraising part of it. So we have to procure privately 50% of the cost of the project. And it's estimated to be about a $30 million project. So we are in the process of trying to raise that one half of it privately. And hopefully we can go forward with it as soon as next year if it gets bonded and stuff. But there's a lot of ifs. End of the day, the Dairy Authority was supposed to sunset this fall because I believe the way the law was written, we were required to identify or purchase property to locate this dairy on. And now that it's moved to the University of St. Paul campus, that part of it's taken care of. But so I think, if I'm correct, Chairman, you have a bill that it will possibly extend the authority because we think it's too early to sunset the authority because we actually do not have this facility built yet. It might send the wrong message if the authority was allowed to sunset now. So hopefully the committee here can approve that bill so the authority can continue seeing this project through because the authority, the people on there are pretty good go-getters and they keep this project moving along. And, you know, it's stalled out over the years now and then and pretty soon we got to put a little fire underneath the thing and keep it moving along. So at that, I'll stop and entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jams. I think this goes back 5 years, and for a while the progress seemed slow, but you continued on and made all those visits and are coming up with the location that you feel is the right fit. The only question I would have with the, if you've at all determined the size operation you're looking at, can you raise all that feed for the herd on location on campus in St. Paul?
Mr. Chairman and committee, that feed right now is not raised on site. It's transported in, so it will continue to operate that way.
Okay.
It does add more cost to operation, the transportation of it. The feed sitting in the field is the same price there, no matter where it's at, but that would be the additional cost. And the thing to look past here is this isn't putting a dairy farm up out in the country. The value comes back to the university, and so the value comes back to attracting good staff. We've been losing some of our specialists in the dairy part of it, animal science part, and you have to have a facility that's going to attract those people, something that, you know, that university has got to have something that's going to attract those people there, and that goes the same for students also. So if I'm a student looking at my options of where I want to go to school, I want to go to the best school that's going to give me the biggest option, and if we don't have that to offer at the university, I shouldn't probably be saying this, but our enrollment is probably going to go down. And then on the dairy farmer side of it is we need skilled, educated people coming back to our farm to do the management end of it. Some of this stuff is getting almost over my head. So this morning I had to, I copied off a little bit for this morning and my printer at home was down. So I went to the barn, I went up in the office and there's three computers sitting up. They're having a different function on the barn. And there's two camera screens up there monitoring everything. So the technology level is just unbelievable. And my herds gal, to identify a sick cow or anything like that, she goes to the computer screen first before she can identify a cow being sick a day before you could visibly see her by looking at her. So yep. The technology is just overwhelming. And this facility is based on technology. So we designed it for using as much technology that's possible and leaving it open for new technology.
Very good. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is actually for the chair that's sitting right next to me, because we're talking about the University of Minnesota. So I don't want to throw you out if you're prepared to do this, but has the university shown any indication that this is a priority in what they're in their plans for this year? Is that a fair question to ask to the chair next to me?
You're not putting on the spot, but Representative Norris.
Well, appreciate the question, Mr. Chair and Representative Miller. The university hasn't been that specific so far in their request. It's more of an all-encompassing request, so I'm assuming somewhere down the road that may happen.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I would think from what I've talked and dealt with Dean Burr and the folks there that this is something that they're committed to. And they want to make it happen. And as you mentioned, the research part, the students and the instructors are a key here, and we want to do this right. Any further questions or comments? No? If not, thanks for the report, and we'll take a look at it again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Last up on the agenda, the Dairy Development and the Profitability Enhancement Program Report. Good morning. Identify yourself and take over.
Good morning, Chair, Representatives. My name is David Winand. I am the Grants Administrator for the Dairy Profitability Enhancement Program. I also work with several other grant programs at the Department of Agriculture. I have just a brief summary of, and I will keep my comments brief. There is, I only have one PowerPoint slide to provide for you. But the Dairy Profitability Enhancement Program has a grant program that works one-on-one with farmers to help them improve their productivity, profitability, and efficiency. They do this in a number of different ways. And again, I'll keep my comments very brief. There is a slide that's up on the screen that's a state map of Minnesota where all the dairy profit teams are operated last fiscal year. So that is, and that this report will be coming out very soon. It's still being vetted. But just for your information, that's where all the teams are in the state. Last year, the dairy profit teams were on 307 farms statewide. We worked with close to 63,000 dairy cows and had close to over $18 million worth of economic developments that came back. So working with these farms, if they increase milk production by just 10 pounds, that's counted as, and it's part of the recommendations of the team, some of the results of the team, that's counted as part of the economic development. In addition, there is in-kind contribution from the industry to these teams. So individuals who sit on the teams, who don't charge for their time, if we just count their time alone, we are in the neighborhood of $658,000 that's coming back from the industry that's dedicated directly to this program. So the industry is actually contributing a lot more than the state is to this program, just in their in-kind contribution alone. Some of the comments from some of the teams, and then I'll open it up for questions, as well as I know that there's individuals in this room who can speak more passionately about the effects that have happened on farms and on teams. But some of the comments that I've been able to glean from some of them is that they've been, that a farm was able to use this program to become debt-free and run their farm debt-free. They were able to mentor a new individual onto the farm. And in some cases, it may have been the next generation. And in some cases, it was non-relative, non-relation at all. So they provided that open door opportunity for those farms. They were able to secure financing from SFA to expand their herd, accommodate a larger herd, and purchase equipment. But not only do these farms work with production-related things, so not only just milk production, feed production as well as milk quality issues. They're also tackling technology issues. You just heard from Greg Jans about technology. And robots are becoming, again, more and more popular on these farms, again, to help with the labor situation. But just installing a robot doesn't solve your problems. There's a lot of learning curve. There's a pretty steep learning curve once you install that on how to run it more efficiently and run the farm more efficiently to provide the best environment for those animals. So they're also working with mental health issues as well as farm family issues and working with them one-on-one to accomplish those tasks. So I will open it up for questions, and I know that there's a lot of individuals in the team or in the room alone who can provide a lot more specific and examples.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wynn, what's the average size, the typical farm size that you work with?
Mr. Wynn's?
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, the average size is probably around 100 cows. But again, we have the majority of the program, the majority of the farms that are in the program are small to medium-sized farms. So it's anything from 2 cows upwards to 500 cows. But generally, there's very few farms that are over 500 cows who need the dairy profit teams. But the dairy profit teams can help any size farm improve their operation.
Question from Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you tell me what coordination you have or do with the farm advocates from MDA and also the mental health provider, Ted Matthews? Just as far as you mentioned mental health being an issue, and just curious about kind of how all of these fit together.
Mr. Winans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, the Farm Advocates are a program in the Minnesota Department of Agriculture who work with farms in relation to helping them on the financial side of things, farm advocates. We work with them, it's a separate program, but the department is under the umbrella of the department, and that is a service that's available for those farms as well as for other farms, whether they have dairy or not. This is just dairy specific. In relation to working with Mr. Matthews, I do know that he has helped a number of farms in relation to dealing with some mental stress issues on the farm. Again, all his clients are confidential, so other than telling you that he has been very helpful in working with some farms, that is all the information that I can provide.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one other group that would be the Farm Business Management instructors through Minnesota State. Could you just comment about that as well, please?
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, yes, the Farm Business Management instructors do serve on these teams and, again, help those farmers become more financially stable, running cash flows, working with them in relation to the farm. And in some cases, it might be a debt restructure so that they can become under a little less financial strain and become more profitable. But they are very important to the overall health and financial status of these farms.
Mr. Winans, talking about the farm families or couples who take advantage of this program, are they involved in the program for a number of years, or is there a point they kind of graduate and leave the program, or you know that they have met the goals and know how to do things?
Mr. Chair, yes, there's a 3-year limit for farms to participate in the program, but I do know that on an annual basis after that, they can re-up. So again, if they are going through an issue where it's production related, that may be able to be solved in a year, maybe two, depending on whatever situation the farm is dealing with. Again, whether it's genetics or it's feed quality or housing situation or whatever, that may be able to be solved in within a year or two, but there may be some bigger issues. They may go through an expansion. And then after the expansion, they deal with how do we then transition this farm from one generation to the next. And transitioning a business or even a farm from one generation to the next is not something that usually can be accomplished in one or two meetings. So that that may take another year, two. But generally, it's a three-year limit for these farms.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions, Representative? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, this is a random question. I have no clue whether you're going to be the best one. Is there a registry somehow where somebody can post that they would be looking for a party who may assume responsibilities? And, of course, that's a large spectrum of I need a herd manager to I need a future owner. Is there such a registry where you can make it known, like the Sears catalog of farms operations for sale?
That's a good question, Mr. Winans.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not specifically directly to what you're asking, but one program that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has is the Farm Link program, where farmers who are near retirement, but have facilities that are in excellent condition, can provide an opportunity for that next generation. Again, whether it's usually, if they're not related, it's how do we mentor someone into that position. Again, so those livestock facilities don't become empty. And we can have livestock where livestock need to be in those excellent facilities. So short answer is not specifically to what you're asking, but the Department of Agriculture has, within the last year, launched the Farm Link program to help link up farms who are going to be retiring soon to individuals who want to farm and help try to make that match.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Winans. I don't see any other questions from members. Good meeting this morning and very interesting. And again, thanks to the dairy folks here and thanks to Minnesota Milk as well. Meeting's adjourned.